That's a little bit better, but still very angry. Oh well. I'm Ben Armstrong, Program Manager on Hyper-V. Today I'm going to be co-presenting with Jose Barreto, File Server Program Manager, and Rob Hindman, Clustering Program Manager. And we are here today to talk about upgrading your private cloud and what you need to know in order to be able to get to, you know, Windows Server 2012 R2 and some things to be thinking about so that you can even move beyond that when we get to that point in time. This is a really big topic. There's a lot of stuff to discuss here. So I'm going to be really upfront and clear. Chances are you're going to have questions that we don't answer today. If we tried to answer everyone's questions, I think we'd probably be here for 3 or 4 hours. So I'm going to go through and kind of set the stage for you. I will just start by saying, you know, the three of us are going to be here for the rest of the week. I'm going to be on the showroom floor at the booth all day tomorrow. Please, 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 you got any questions, come by, ask us. We're happy to chat and talk through. So, first I want to set some assumptions that we're going in with. As I said, there's too much to talk about if we cover everything here. So, to kind of narrow it down, we're making a couple of assumptions. The first assumption seems kind of obvious because you're here, but we are going to assume that you want to upgrade your private cloud infrastructure. So we're not going to be spending a lot of time in this session trying to sell you on cool new features in 2012 R2. Hopefully you've been to other sessions, you've seen some stuff that excites you, you're thinking about like, yeah, okay, we need to be figuring out what the roadmap and the story is here. Next assumption, and this is something that we've been discussing a lot, is our assumption is whenever you look at any operational change to your private cloud, upgrade being a very big one, the top thing that you care about is that the people who are using the virtual machines, the people that are using the services provided by your private cloud, should not notice that an upgrade is happening. Well, that's an assumption that we're making. The next assumption that we're making, buying new hardware is not the end of the world, but it does really slow things down. You know, so if at all possible, you're probably going to want to avoid buying new hardware in order to upgrade your private cloud. There are pros and cons here. I know from talking to many people, I've been spending the last couple of months going around and talking to people and saying, hey, how long does it take you to roll out a new version of Windows Server? You know, and I'd get an answer where it's like, oh, it takes us 14 months. I'm like, okay, let's break that down. You know, what does, like, where's that time come from? And the biggest chunk that I hear about is, well, if I have to buy new hardware, that's 6 months gone right there. You know, because I have to research the hardware, I have to do the business case, I have to do so on, so on, so on. So we're assuming buying new hardware, not the end of the world, but pretty undesirable. Next one, next assumption we have. Just because you're in the middle of upgrading your private cloud doesn't mean you get a magic pass that says that you don't need to meet SLAs for people using your virtual machines. You know, throughout the upgrade process, you need to still guarantee that SLAs are being met and that your customers are happy. Similarly, you need to maintain high availability throughout the upgrade process. You know, this all comes back to the original point that I made that, you know, we believe that your goal is, you know, the services that are offered by my private cloud are maintained throughout this process, and, you know, the users of those services don't see massive disruption. The final point, and this is just a case of we only have an hour or so to talk today, is we're going to assume that your guest operating systems are upgraded on a separate cadence through a separate cycle. So we're not going to be going in and talking about like, okay, you update all your infrastructure and then you go through and upgrade the virtual machines and so on. Most people we talk to do view these as two very distinct operations. You know, just because you're upgrading your private cloud infrastructure does not necessitate that you're going through and upgrading all the guest operating systems. So we're not going to be diving into that very much today. So with all of that in mind, all of these assumptions to kind of to narrow down the discussion. We're going to try and step you through a fairly well-defined scenario today and talk about the options that are available to you. So the first focus is really we're going to be looking at, okay, if you've got 2012, how do you get to 2012 R2? Now, I've talked to a number of you through this event, and I talked to a couple of you just before this event, so there are some points I'd like to call out here. The first one is we are well aware that probably most of the people in this room running Hyper-V are still on 2008 R2 or are only halfway to getting to 2012. In fact, let's do a show of hands here. How many people here are still running 2008 R2? Man, it is really hard to see this through the spotlights. There are people, thank you, person waving your hand. You're just a black silhouette to me. how many people are in the middle of deploying 2012? So you have 2008 R2 and 2012. So I'm going to say about a third of the room. Does that seem right to you? How many people are actually just on 2012? Yay, we have a couple of people. Good work, guys. So at the end of this, we are going to go through and talk about the 2012 to 2012 R2 process. At the end of this, we are going to be touching on how this maps to 2008 R2 to 2012 and to 2012 R2. The kind of meta point that I would like everyone here to have in the back of your head is we're going to be discussing through some things which, given where you are right now, you may be going, you know what, that doesn't apply to me because I don't have my private cloud architected that way. Well, when I get to those points, I would like you to stop and think and go, you know what, maybe as I'm doing my current deployment, as I'm doing my next deployment, I need to be doing it like that so that it is easier to upgrade in the future. This is one of the biggest points that I like to make to people is the reality is, and this is not something that we as an industry have been doing, the reality is that in the world we're in, you know, with rapid software release, you need to be designing your private cloud day one so that it is considering the fact that in the not-too-distant future, you're going to want to upgrade this. No, do not design your private cloud with no thought of upgrade and then, you know, a year and a half later be sitting there going like, well, crap, how do I upgrade this? You know, that is too late. You need to be thinking about it at the beginning. So the next, going further into details. So as we're discussing today, we're going to go through an assumed deployment. We're going to assume you have System Center for your management, Hyper-V for Hyper-V clusters for compute nodes, and Windows file server clusters for storage. As I said, I know that this isn't going to map to everyone, but we actually view this as the ideal model. And to give a little context here, to call out a couple of things, you know, if you're looking at Microsoft, and I know that some of you are here, and I'm going to try and be polite as I hit you upside the head with a 2x4. If you're looking at doing Microsoft Private Cloud and you're not looking seriously at System Center, please stop. You know, it is our offering. It is when Microsoft talks about Private Cloud, this is the stack that we talk about. So if you come to me and you say, I want to do Private Cloud, but I just want to use Windows Server and I don't want to use System Center, that's nice. You know, but that's not the solution we're building. You know, if you want to get everything out of a Microsoft Private Cloud, you need System Center in there managing and orchestrating your environment. For the VMware people in the audience, and I know we have a couple, saying that you want to do Private Cloud without System Center would be like saying you want to do VMware Private Cloud with only ESXi. No, it ain't happening. So System Center is key. The second thing that I'd like to call out is I have actually been accused of being the Hyper-V program manager who spends all his time talking about SMB, because I do talk about SMB a lot, and I'm going to talk about it here. I am really, really encouraging people. If you're doing a private cloud deployment, honestly, You know, I would love you to be using Spaces on the back end. That's where Microsoft's investing a lot at the moment. But honestly, I don't care what storage you have on the back end, as long as you have a scale-out file server between Hyper-V and the cluster. It gives us a lot of flexibility. It gives us a lot of performance. It gives us a lot of resilience. It brings a lot of goodness to the picture. So that's, and I've talked to a couple of people through this. If you're hearing that and you're going, well, you know, I don't agree with that. I don't think that makes sense for my environment. Please come down to the booth tomorrow. I'll be there and I'll be happy to explain why you're wrong. No. I'll be happy to have a reasoned discussion and explain why I have that opinion. So this is the flow that we're going to be talking through. So the first thing to talk about is, so you have your private cloud, you've got System Center managing it, you've got Hyper-V compute, you've got Windows File Server for your storage. Where do you start? Now, the first place that we believe you should start is with upgrading your management software, so upgrading System Center. The first and foremost reason for doing this is you upgrade System Center, and then you can use System Center to help you orchestrate the rest of the process. Now, by getting System Center across first, you know, System Center 2012 R2 supports managing, you know, Windows Server 2012 R2, Windows Server 2012, Windows Server 2008 R2. So you get the latest System Center in there, and now you have the tools, you have the central console, you have the orchestration and the automation to make this process easier. Now, that said, you know, an important thing to think about as you're going through System Center is, what are the bits that I care about? Now, different people have different System Center components in them, and many of these different System Center components have different SLAs. You know, so one of the things I mentioned very early in the assumptions was, you know, the focus needs to be, am I meeting my SLAs? Am I, you know, making sure that the users of my private cloud don't know that I'm upgrading. Now, a simple example, let's say that my SLA in my environment is that I'm going to guarantee that people who are using services from my private cloud, that I'm backing those up at least once every 24 hours. That's my SLA. Well, great, you know, fine. Take a couple of hours to upgrade your DPM server. You know, you can, you know, table that and be like, fine, you know, as long as I get it done in a day, you know, follow the process. So you need to go through and look at all your components, look at how they affect your SLAs, and figure out which are the ones that I need to prioritize, which are the ones which is like, yeah, we'll get to it when we get to it. A key thing to call out, I have a link here. We have this document out there for System Center 2012 SP1. I have been guaranteed by the System Center guys that when we do R2, they're going to be updating this link so it will still work. This link is a really useful document to go and read when you're looking at upgrading System Center, because it specifically calls out when there are System Center components that have dependencies on each other, the order that you should upgrade them in. So I'm not going to go into that in full detail today, but the order is called out there. The one thing that I would like to call out, we've had a couple of customers get surprised by this, is if you are following our best practice, you have a number of components of System Center deployed, you have System Center Operations Manager then monitoring those components, remember to turn off the alerts before you upgrade them. We've had a couple of people now where they've had the whole thing set up. They've, you know, gone through, started upgrading, you know, components, you know, and as part of the upgrade, well, you know, they took that off for 15 minutes, offline for 15 minutes, and, you know, all of a sudden, Operations Manager was, like, spamming their, you know, help desk, going like, ah, servers are down. You know, be mindful of that. So with all of that said, I'm going to focus today just on System Center Virtual Machine Manager. That is the most important piece for orchestrating the upgrade of your private cloud. Now, System Center Virtual Machine Manager going from 2012 SP1 to 2012 R2 does not support in-place upgrade, but done well, you can do this upgrade with honestly about 5 minutes downtime. So a couple of things to understand here. I know that for some of you this is going to be old hat, but I know we have a number of people in the audience who are still very new to System Center Virtual Machine Manager. The architecture of System Center Virtual Machine Manager is basically that on the back end, they have a SQL database that stores all the information about your environment, all the logic, all the policies that you have. So for your best upgrade story around System Center Virtual Machine Manager, what you actually want to do first, and this surprises some people, make sure it's virtualized. Stick it in a... There's light. I can see everyone. Hello. Stick it in a virtual machine. That gives you a lot more flexibility and options. And yes, you can have System Center... Light's going. You can have System Center Virtual Machine Manager running in a virtual machine that's actually on the virtualization infrastructure that it's managing. That does not cause the end of the world. It does not cause computers to explode. It's all good. It's fine. But what your best option for an upgrade type scenario is that when you deploy System Center Virtual Machine Manager in a virtual machine, that you actually set it up with an external database. So System Center Virtual Machine Manager allows you to install everything on one box. You can do that. But it also allows you to put System Center Virtual Machine Manager on one box and put the database on another. So why would you want to use the database in another virtual machine? Well, what the process looks like here is if you've got this set up, System Center Virtual Machine Manager in one virtual machine, the database backend in another virtual machine, what you can actually do is go, okay, we're going to upgrade to 2012 R2. I'm going to spin up a third virtual machine. I'm going to get the operating system installed. I'm going to get all the prerequisite requirements installed. I'm going to get System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012 R2 95% installed. But then once you get to that stage, you can be like, okay, now shut down my old System Center, go to my new System Center Virtual Machine Manager and say, okay, finish installing, and by the way, your database is over there. And it will come up, it will connect to that database, it will read out all the information, it will connect to all your Hyper-V servers, your clusters, so on, without any need to go through, reconfigure, rediscover, etc. So as I said, a well-planned upgrade, you can do this with 5 minutes downtime. And you then have the new System Center Virtual Machine Manager up and running and managing your environment. So, what next? And why do I have this slide? While Jose comes up, I will explain why we have this slide. I have this slide because I had a heated argument with one of the guys who works for me, a fellow called Taylor Brown. And we actually argued about what should come next in this presentation. And he won the argument, but my compromise was, I said, okay, Taylor, you can win as long as I can put up a slide and tell people that we argued about this, and you can actually do either. So at this stage, we've now upgraded our System Center environment. We've got the new System Center Virtual Machine Manager. And the question is, what are you going to go off to next? Are you going to upgrade your storage, or are you going to upgrade your compute? And the reality is, you can do either. If you're me, you would upgrade your compute first, and then you would upgrade your storage. If you're Taylor, you would upgrade your storage first, and then you would upgrade your compute. And in fact, if you're someone who likes to fly by the seat of your pants, you can do both of these at the same time. For today, we are going to talk about storage next, and I'm going to hand over to Jose, who will talk us through that.
Cool. Can you guys hear me? Awesome. So we're going to talk about upgrading storage, and the idea here is to give you some procedures, a few different ones that you could use if you want to migrate something that's currently running in Windows Server 2012, and you want to move it to R2 when it becomes available. And some of that will apply even to other scenarios, maybe not even a file server role, right? But others that are deployed in a similar fashion. Now, on the file server end, if you're deploying Hyper-V over SMB, the story starts with SMB 3.0, right? So we started support for this scenario with SMB 3.0 in Windows Server 2012. So I'm hoping that nobody is out there deploying this with a 2008 or 2008 R2 file server, because you would be an unsupported configuration, okay? Tools that we have available to you so you can go ahead and perform the task. And those are the tools that I thought, well, these are your the ways that you could potentially move data around or move roles around. The first one, which is kind of obvious, is the storage migration, which technically doesn't really, it's not storage migration, it's a move, right? There's different types of move, and one of the moves your storage. And Hyper-V has been kind enough to make that totally agnostic to what's happening behind the scenes in terms of storage. So that's a great tool that you can move from any place to any place. As long as the source and destination can see it, you're in great shape. The other thing, which Rob is going to go into much more detail on, is the copy cluster roles wizard, which has had previous names before. But essentially, the ability that we have to move a cluster configuration from one side, a set of cluster resources, from one cluster that's running one version to another cluster that's using another version, okay? We also have the ability to even do this by messing up with the cluster you currently have today, splitting it, doing all kinds of fun stuff, and that is what we mean when we say upgrading place. So the copy cluster role wizard also applies there. I'm going to go into some detail. Finally, that's the other thing that we always talk about. Some of this stuff you want to do from the GUI to experiment with, to understand what's going on. But for any project of any significant size, you need to learn the PowerShell behind these things, and you need to start thinking about automation. Right? You do it once, you test it out, then you find what the script is, you do it in the test environment, and then when you're ready to go, you probably don't want to depend on the guy at the keyboard making a mistake right there and then. So script it out, that's the best way to go. Okay? Having said that, I'm going to talk about four distinct ways that you could go about making that move. I honestly believe that we could, in certain situations, do this with no additional hardware, but your life is always easier if you could invest at least a little bit more to help with the transition. I'm going to elaborate on that. I have actually an example here where we technically have an existing cluster and we get it to the next version without adding any new hardware, but in fact, that is only happening because you had some spare capacity in the first place. So the two main things is you want to invest in more hardware or you want to put little investment in more hardware. I'm not going to try to fool you and say, oh, yeah, you just get your full, like 99% full file server and you're going to migrate over. Not going to happen. You have to have something to work with, okay? Let's start with the easiest one. The easiest one is you simply have a good opportunity as you move from one storage solution to your next generation storage solution. Maybe you're on a lease, maybe the machine is old and you want to replace it anyway. So you have the interesting opportunity to have a new storage infrastructure that you can place side by side with your existing infrastructure, and you simply do a storage migration, a live storage migration. You move the storage for your VMs from your old storage to your new storage. I hope you're all aware that we have been able to do it in 2012, right? So you just can go there and say, move. That's it. What does Hyper-V do? It actually reads all the data from the source, writes everything to the destination while the VM is running. And at some point, you have two copies of your data that are absolutely in sync. At that point, Hyper-V moves over, and you no longer use the source. Of course, if you're doing a lot of work, while you're doing the migration, the rate of change is going to be higher, and then you have more stuff to catch up with. Okay? This is not unlike what we do for memory in the live migration process. So the live migration, same thing. You create essentially a clone of your VM, and you have a memory on both sides. You start moving memory. At some point, you catch up with the move, and you take a blackout period, and you go, boom, move. Right? However, that's the good part. No downtime. However, there are two issues with this. Number one, you are moving all your data through the network. You better have a good network or a lot of patience. Maybe both, right? So this might be acceptable in a few situations, maybe not for everyone, right? The other thing is that you do need to have additional storage. You need to have storage on the other side to catch the entire thing, okay? What does it look like? You set up a new cluster, you configure access through the goodness of being able to do these SMB configurations where you can actually have, you know, multiple clusters accessing the same storage, multiple storage systems being accessed by the same cluster. You have all the flexibility in file storage. That's what Ben was referring to. If you're doing this with block storage, it's sometimes a little bit trickier, right? But in any case, storage migration is really smart, so you always can find a way to do it. And then you do the migration. There's a little screenshot of the tool. So the cluster guys, if you have a cluster VM, you can see how easy it is. You can even do a drag and drop migration where you move your stuff around. It's very, very convenient, okay? So just to recap, on one side you have your 2012 cluster. On the other side you have your new R2 cluster with your new storage. You migrate. VMs are not shown here, right? This is just the storage side. Okay. Another solution. You don't want to move the data. You have too much data, or your network is not that good, or you were never a patient guy to begin with. Okay? That happens. You know what? I'll just take the downtime. How much downtime? It depends on a few factors. We'll describe what you need to do here. But essentially, we're going to do a copy cluster role. And Rob is going to give you a demo a little bit later on how that actually works. But the idea is you have two sets of machines. You get some additional hardware for the heads, for the controllers, if you will. And you have it all connected to the same fabric. And you quickly clone the resources on one cluster, on the other cluster, then you shut down, bring up. Jose, is that transparent? No. We can do transparent failover all day long in the same cluster. When you move from one cluster to another cluster, there will be downtime. On the other hand, you don't move any data over the network. You literally use the same physical spindles to be the ones that you access from the second cluster. Okay? You have to set up the new cluster. You can actually set up that new cluster ahead of time. You can actually copy the roles ahead of time. And they're on one side, off on the other side. And what you have to do is you prepare for downtime. Okay, are we good? Are we all good? Are we all set? The copy is there. Okay, so you offline here, you online there. That's the minimum amount of downtime, but there will be downtime. Technically, you don't need additional hardware if you have enough nodes in the cluster that you can evict and bring up on the other end. I'm going to cover that in the other one. But let's see what that means. So you have your existing cluster. You set up your new cluster over there. You wire it all up to the same storage, right? And you move. Okay? That's the idea. Upgrade in place. Okay. Now this stuff is getting trickier. You don't have the extra hardware. You tried, it will take too long, but you have a two-node cluster. By definition, you have to have two nodes. One node can probably take the load. You'd be kind of overloaded for that time. And If you're running off of single node, that single node is what we in the cluster business like to call a single point of failure. So it's a risk. But there is a potential for having absolute, no new hardware required in this scenario, short downtime as we did before, and you don't move anything over the network. The steps, right? So you prepare, you evict the node that you are using. At that point, you're starting to think, oh my God, I'm only one node. But you set up the other end, then you migrate, as we talked before, then you finalize and you reestablish your high availability. Let's go through this. You start like this. There's your cluster. There's your disk. You split the cluster. You evict that node, and you use that node to form a single node cluster on R2 on the other side. At that point, your fingers should be crossed because you are not highly available. Okay? Jose, what if I wanted to be? Well, there's always the option of buying another server to make that unnecessary, right? So you can get the new server on that end and keep highly available for as much as you can. Anyway, you didn't have that, so you went for it. You configured the two servers. They were already wired to the storage, right? So you don't have to kind of rewire anything. You do the what we described with the cluster and all that. You move, and then you reestablish your high availability. Risky? Yes. The other option we described previously. You get a few servers to make sure that's possible. Okay? That is one way to do it. All right. Then there's the one. You're noticing a trend of increasing complexity here. Right? So the notion here is we don't want the downtime. Even if it's 5 seconds, I don't want the downtime. It's probably like a few minutes anyway, right? You would have to stop all the VMs that are using that storage in order to do it. Some people say, you know what? I'll do it in my weekly maintenance window. And that's fine by them. Some people, there is no such thing as a weekly maintenance window. This thing never stops, right? So here's an option. You don't have the spare storage to put side by side with the other one, but you have some spare capacity. So what we're going to do, we're going to split the cluster. And in this case, I'm using a 4-node cluster that I'm going to split. The reason you had 4 nodes is because you wanted to handle the load. At that point, when you split the cluster, you are overloading your servers if you did a good design. But it's not a question of failure. It's just performance will diminish. You will not lose high availability if you have a 4-node cluster and you split in half, right? The other thing we're doing, we're not moving the entire storage at once because we don't have enough storage to put on the other side. So we're going to try to evacuate a portion of our storage so we free up enough disks that we can remove that pool and create that pool on the other end. Let me kind of go through it. Maybe it makes more sense through a diagram. So you're the lucky guy with a 4-node file server scale-out cluster, and you have 4 pools. Maybe they're a little bigger than this diagram, okay? Anyway, first thing you do, you split the cluster, right? That means you evicted 2 nodes from your cluster, which remain as a Windows Server 2012 cluster with 2 nodes, you are degraded. But you're still highly available. You can still lose a node. You'll be further degraded in terms of performance, but it will not fail. Okay? And you have a new cluster formed out of the 2 nodes that you removed. To be clear, you evict, you flatten it out, you reinstall, you form a new cluster. That target cluster is also highly available because you have 2 nodes. What you do next is you evacuate one of the pools. That means that you have to start doing migrations, which means that in this case, it's not a simple case of migrate from source to destination, you're done. This might mean migrate on the source from one pool to another pool so you can have enough free space to have that entire pool freed up. So what you do, you remove that pool and you create it on the other server, right? At that point, you have two functioning clusters and you can do a move from your source to your destination with limited amount of extra disks available to you. If you remember when we started this, this was a single cluster, so the wiring to the physical disks was already there, okay? Then you evacuate the next pool because you freed up enough, and then you move it until it's all done. And in the end, you reform the formula cluster. Okay? Jose, I don't like any of your options. I know. I mean, there's magic, and then there's the real world, right? And then there's the magic you're still learning to do, right? You can do it's you know, sleight of hand and make some things look like they're magic. And we are thinking really hard about this scenario. We want to make it better. One of the things that we're trying to say here is you can make your life easier in the future if you don't get only the absolute minimum required hardware for your environment, but you think a little bit ahead. So many people ask me, Jose, why would I have three nodes in a cluster? Two nodes can handle the load just fine. In fact, one node can do it. I put the second one just for HA. The reason for the third node, maybe the fourth node, is you're providing yourself some cushion to perform some of the stuff we're talking about here. Never plan to use all of your storage. That's a rule, right? Dedupe helps. Some other strategies like difference in disk and other things will help. You should have spare capacity. Not only because you're always getting more load, you should plan ahead, right? And if you're thinking of buying the 24-disk JBOD, you know, the 60-disk JBOD is a great thing. And you know what? You don't have to fill it up. You can actually have a 60-disk JBOD with 24 disks in it. So just, you know, food for thought. And we are absolutely aware that we could do more magic. And we'll think about it really hard for the future. Okay? With that, I'm going to hand over to the man that is doing magic in the present. Mr. Ben.
Thank you very much.
Clicker?
You've hidden it over here. So now we've talked through compute. And a couple of things that I want to highlight, because these are going to be some common themes that come out. The first one is, yes, you're going to need to plan these processes. The second one, which I'd really like to call out, I meant to call it out in my introduction, and I was kicking myself for not doing it, is one of the realities that we've found as we've looked at this is if you really care about zero downtime upgrade, there is kind of a minimum bar of scale. You know, if you come to us and you're like, you know, hey, I've got, you know, two Hyper-V servers, and I want to upgrade with zero downtime. Okay, that might be a bit tricky. But once you start getting to the larger scales, you have more options. And the final thing I just want to reiterate, it'll come up again in my session, and this is, it is really important, as Jose mentioned, that you plan capacity for your upgrade process. So with that in mind, let's talk about upgrading compute. So hopefully you're aware now we're adding cross-version live migration to 2012 R2. This was one of the first things we looked at. We knew that 2012 was really popular. People were getting excited about it, planning deployments, starting deployments. We also knew we were working on 2012 R2, and we did not want to slow people down. In fact, I can tell you, when we started looking at the feature list, for what are we going to do in 2012 R2, I had to argue with some of the members of my team about, like, are we going to go after cross-version live migration or not? And one of the things that I explicitly said, you know, 9 months ago, was I said, look, next June, I'm going to be at TechEd. And I am going to be talking to people who are in the middle of deploying 2012. And they're going to come to me and they're going to say, Ben, what the heck? How can we handle 2012 R2 if we're only in the middle of moving to 2012? And I was very clear to the team, we need to have answers ready. And that's where we invested in cross-version live migration. So a key thing to point out, because I get lots of questions about this, when we say cross-version live migration, we mean every form of live migration. So the most complicated one is cross-version, cross-cluster, shared nothing live migration. Yeah, it all works. That's actually the primary scenario that we went after specifically for looking at upgrading your private cloud. So the scenario that we envision and that we've tested this scenario extensively ourselves, and this is our platinum story for, hey, if you have a 2012 private cloud and you want to go to 2012 R2, it's very similar to the story that Jose told, in that what we're going to say is, okay, you have a cluster, and hopefully you've been good and you've planned your cluster with spare capacity. You know, hopefully you're doing that for reasons other than upgrade. You know, you're not running this to the wire. So you're able, during an upgrade window, to go in there and first, either through System Center Virtual Machine Manager or through the failover cluster management tools, say, please evict the virtual machines from two of these nodes. Both those tools allow you to very easily go in and just select a box and say, no, prepare this box for maintenance, and they'll automatically move all the virtual machines off with zero downtime. So once you have evicted the virtual machines, you remove the nodes from the cluster, you create your new cluster with these nodes, and we like to call this the seed cluster. Because once you've got this small cluster ready, then it is a very easy process to go through and do cross-version, cross-cluster live migration, and you can then roll across one node at a time and move the virtual machines across. This is actually a fairly seamless process. So I actually want to show you, firstly, the demo gods cursed me on Monday, and I'm using exactly the same demo rig. Actually, I need your password, speaking of demo gods cursing me. So I honestly don't have high expectations for my demos working today, but we're going to see what happens. Here, I can take it from here. So first thing, I'm going to kick off a live migration through SCVMM here. So this is actually a System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012 R2, and I have my demo virtual machine here. It's running on Clio, which is a Windows Server 2012 virtual machine. I'm going to select to migrate the virtual machine. Man, the laptop screen shaking is really off-putting. So you can see here that System Center Virtual Machine Manager has come up, and it's given me a couple of options. The first one it's chosen is Calliope, which you can see is my other 2012 server. But I'm going to come down here, and I'm going to select Uterper, which in a moment it's actually going to show us that that's my 2012 R2 server. And it's offering it as an option, just like everything else. Nothing special to configure here. I can go ahead and do a live migration. So it's going to kick that off. So while that's happening, I actually want to explain a couple of things here. This configuration that I have, I set this up intentionally, is actually basically in the middle of an upgrade. I have paused it in the middle of an upgrade to do my demos at TechEd. Because what I have for this configuration, you see here that I have Boeotia, which is my 2012 Hyper-V cluster. I have Mount Helicon as my 2012 R2 cluster. These are actually talking on the back end to a 2012 scale-out file server and a 2012 R2 scale-out file server, which are in turn four computers all connected to a single SAS chassis. And I actually have it configured right now in the middle of the process that Jose was discussing, where I have half the disks in that chassis assigned to one storage server, storage cluster, and I have the other half the disks assigned to the other storage cluster. So this is all possible. Now, one of the things I would like to highlight, when I started, I talked about, you know, you want to upgrade System Center first so you can use it for orchestration. My live migration has completed. I should go check Uterper and make sure, yep, Windows Server Demo is there. Yay. No, I talked about, hey, you want to do this with System Center. You want to upgrade System Center first. One of the, it seems like a small thing reason for doing this, but in a production environment, yeah, it's really important, is all the processes that we're talking about here, we're talking about, okay, we're going to be in various forms. We're standing up new clusters, and we're moving the workload across. You know, we're telling you how to do this in ways that minimize the time, minimize the downtime, so on. But at the end of the day, that's what's happening. Well, when you do that, something kind of small and easy to miss happens, and that is you change the network name of everything. Has anyone ever changed a network name and had it cause problems in their environment? No one. I had three people. Come on. We know that this causes problems. If you upgrade System Center first and use it to orchestrate the process, it ensures that all your management tools keep track of these virtual machines and are aware of the name changes, and you don't get bitten by that. Now, that said, I do want to highlight, I just did this cross-version live migration using the System Center UI. Of course, you can do that through PowerShell as well. I also want to highlight, because every time I do a demo in System Center, one of the first questions I get is that a System Center only thing? You can also do this through the Hyper-V UI. The fun thing here is we actually haven't changed the UI at all for this because it's just a live migration. So I can select this virtual machine, I can choose to move it, and I use the same experience that I would for doing a migration between two 2012 servers. The only difference is I'm going to type in the name of a 2012 R2 server. There's no other difference here. It's going to go out and interrogate that. The next thing I want to talk about while this is happening is, in this demo, I'm actually doing just a cross-version, cross-cluster live migration. I'm not moving the storage as well, simply because if I move the storage as well, it would make the demo take longer. And I have a problem with name resolution in my life. Ah, there we go. But this is an interesting consideration. And so I'm going to say move only the virtual machine. And this comes back to the discussion about do you do compute first or you do storage first or you do you do both at the same time? I love it. Okay, it failed. It worked before. I'll have to figure out why that happened. Something that we want to be clear on is you can stage this as it makes sense in your environment. So something that we worked on hard here was with Hyper-V and SMB support, we support having a 2012 R2 cluster talking to a 2012 file server cluster. It's SMB3. We also support the other way around. We support having a Hyper-V 2012 cluster talking to an SMB 2012 R2 cluster. It's SMB3. That's our requirement. So please do not get in your head that, you know, I have to do this all at once and like, meh. I am sure that we are going to have people where they go, you know what? Really excited about some of the new features in 2012 R2. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to upgrade my Hyper-V infrastructure and my System Center infrastructure, but I'm going to hold off on upgrading my storage infrastructure until I get the budget for that new storage that I want. That's fine. That's a fully supported configuration. Please do not feel that you have to do all of this at once. So once I've done these cross-version live migrations, I have my virtual machines running on the other side. While I said that we weren't going to discuss upgrading the guest operating system, there is an important thing that you need to do, and that is you need to upgrade the integration components. Now, a couple of things to clarify here. The first thing is the world is not going to end if you don't upgrade integration components. In fact, everything just continues to work fine. You will not get access to some of the new features of 2012 R2, but you do get access to a number of them. For instance, without updating integration components, you can now do online VHDX resize. You now have storage QoS. You now have a whole bunch of features that just work. There are also some features where, nope, that's not going to work until you have new integration components. We have some cool improvements in network performance around VRSS. Well, you need new integration components for that. We have some performance improvements around the storage. Well, you need new integration components for that. Luckily, you can deploy new integration components without having an immediate reboot. Because it would be kind of silly if we went to all this work to be like, yeah, do a cross-version live migration, zero downtime. Now that you're on the other side, please reboot straight away so you can get new integration components. That doesn't make sense. So what you can do is, here's the command line option. You can run the integration components installer in the virtual machine, specify this option, and what it will do is it will lay down all the components for integration, the integration components, but it will not reboot the virtual machine. And what will happen is the next time that that virtual machine is rebooted for some other reason, either the admin of the guest operating system reboots it for a configuration change, or there's another patch or update or a natural maintenance window where it's going to be rebooted anyway, it gets rebooted, the new integration components come up. The key thing here is, this comes back to one of our first assumptions that we stated, was you don't want the people using your services, using your virtual machines, to have to know that the upgrade was taking place. This allows you to go in there and be like, yeah, I'm going to run this. I don't have to email the person and be like, hey, can I reboot your virtual machine? That's never a fun email to send. So that said, that's kind of our premier option. The reality is that option only makes sense if you have scale and if you have capacity. I've been talking to a number of customers leading up to this to kind of get a feel for, what sort of size do you need to be at for this to look like a reasonable process. And my kind of gut instinct is it's somewhere between 8 and 16 nodes. If I talk to someone who has a 14-node cluster, and I say, this process, they're like, oh, yeah, fine. If I talk to someone who has an 8 or a 9-node cluster and say, this process, they kind of go, like evacuate two boxes at once and evict them, that's going to make my cluster awfully tight. If you have a 3 or a 4-node cluster, no, you won't have enough capacity in there to evacuate two nodes. So the premier option, you really need the size. So what are some of the alternates? First alternate, you could play things risky. Evacuate one node. Start with a one node 2012 R2 cluster. It does mean that you will have a window of not having high availability, but it allows you to do this on a smaller deployment. Of course, as soon as you get the second node across, you're now back to high availability. But that's an alternate. As Jose just said, migrate the VMs that belong to the people that you don't like first, if you're doing that. Another alternate is maybe you buy some new hardware to act as the seed. So let's say you have an 8-node cluster and you go, I'd be okay with evicting one box and moving it across, but two is kind of tight. Well, okay, buy one more box. Don't buy another 8 servers. Buy one server, VictWAN move across, you now have a two-node cluster to act as your seed cluster, and you can move across. That's an option. Another option, and this is an interesting discussion, and this comes back to Jose touched on this a bit with the moving over the network, is I actually talked with a customer with a very large deployment of Hyper-V recently, and we were talking through the upgrade process, and we talked them through cross-version live migration. And their reaction was like, well, that's really cool, and I'm really happy to hear that, but you do realize that in my infrastructure, live migrating every virtual machine I have will take about a month, just given the number of virtual machines, the amount of memory, the amount of network. So we kind of chatted through, and what they actually ended up doing was they were like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to go and we're going to classify our workloads. You know, we have our platinum tier, and we have our gold and silver and so on. And we already have SLAs for a bunch of these virtual machines in place where we tell people, like, yeah, we may take it down for servicing. And they said, okay, what we're going to do is our platinum virtual machines, those are actually about 15% of our infrastructure. We're going to do the cross-version live migration for those. But for the other guys, we're not going to do cross-version live migration. So we have some great options here, because it turns out that in making cross-version live migration work, rather unintentionally, we made every other migration path work as well. So save states are compatible. Snapshots or checkpoints, they're compatible. Basically, exported virtual machine configurations, they're compatible. Backups, they're compatible. Anything you get, it's compatible. If you're a small shop and you don't have hardware and this isn't an option, really simple, just do an in-place upgrade. What we're going to do is we're going to put those virtual machines into a safe state. 30 minutes later, we'll have the new operating system up. All your configuration will be there, and the virtual machines will be back running. Honestly, it usually is about 30 minutes. If you're a larger shop, I've got virtual machine import here. This is actually something that the customer I was talking to had, the 4 weeks of virtual machines to live migrate did for their lower tier. Is what they actually did was put all their virtual machines into a safe state, disconnect the SAN from their 2012 server, connect it to a server that had been upgraded to 2012 R2, import the virtual machines. The whole process was actually very quick, but it allowed them to not have to wait for live migration. So those are some other options. Those ones do involve downtime, and our leading recommendation, is use cross-version live migration. There are times when that may not work. The final point to make here, and this is me kind of beating the drum about you should really be using file server. Something to be aware of, if you are not using file server, if you have your storage connected directly to your Hyper-V cluster and you're using a CSV volume, then you have an issue in this. Because what's going to happen is you're going to get to the end of the moving the nodes across. You're going to have a cluster that's working, but it'll be a cluster that hasn't been validated. And in order to get a full validation report and be in a supported configuration, cluster validation takes the disks offline. And so that's downtime. Now, if you're using file server, you can actually go through and do a full validation on your Hyper-V cluster without taking anything offline. And you can get that full support statement. So just yet another reason why I really encourage, especially for those of you who are in the middle of planning your 2012 deployments, thinking about moving to 2012, please, please, please be planning Hyper-V talks to file server, talks to storage. It really makes life a lot easier on so many fronts. So with that, I am going to hand over to the good Rob Hindman, who is going to talk about the options for moving from 2008 R2 to 2012 R2.
Excellent. Thank you, Ben. Okay, my name is Rob Hindman. I am a program manager for failover clustering. And I have the best job in the world because I get to work with Ben and Jose. So these guys are great. Okay, so just a quick overview. Many of you, you raised your hands. Many of you are running VMs on 2008 R2, and I want to talk about the process for moving them over to Windows Server 2012 or Windows Server 2012 R2. So let's talk about Copy Cluster Role Wizard, formerly known as the Migration Wizard. Okay, we're not going to read the text here. No one ever does. All right, so this feature, when we talk about this, this will move cluster roles to a Windows Server 2012 R2 cluster from a Windows Server 2012 R2 cluster from itself and Windows Server 2012 or Windows Server 2008 R2. So this wizard always can move workloads up from its own version, one level back, or two levels back. So if you have a workload that's running Windows Server 2008, what do you do? Well, you could actually go back a version to 2012 and then use the wizard there to move it up to 2008 R2 and then use this wizard. See? Okay. All right, let's talk a little bit about this. This wizard is great for testing migration, for checking that you can move the clustered workloads up to 2012 R2 without any interruption. It's fully reversible. It's very useful for copying roles. So we have customers that use it for consolidation, customers that use it for copying from a test or a prototype environment over to a production environment. So it has a lot of different uses. Couple of things we need to drill down on. We assume that your storage will be reused. So we're actually not copying any data using this wizard. So let's drill down on that specifically. So it's worth reviewing. So imagine I have this configuration here. I have a two-node Hyper-V cluster with attached storage. What I mean by reusing storage is we're going to form a new cluster, just as Jose mentioned. That new cluster and all of the nodes in the new cluster are attached to that to the same storage as the nodes in the old cluster. Then we copy the roles, we copy the VMs over, and there's no downtime at this point. The downtime occurs when you offline the VMs and you online them here. So there's downtime, but we say it's limited. Right? So usually takes less than 5 minutes. It can take longer depending upon the number of VMs you have, but it's usually very short. And then after this stage, then you can go ahead and remove that old cluster. So you disconnect storage, and there you go. You can move the nodes over from the old cluster over here if you so desire for better availability. Okay, at a high level, we've already talked about the four important cluster roles that the wizard can migrate. So it can migrate the Hyper-V workload, the scale-out file server, CSV disks, storage pools, storage spaces. It can also handle the general file server role, physical disk, clustered registry settings, et cetera, et cetera. So it can handle a lot more. What it doesn't handle does not support SQL Server, right? SQL Server has its own upgrade story, right? So our colleagues in SQL Server manage that story. Same for Exchange Server, Print Spooler, Remote Desktop Broker, et cetera. Right? So it's important to understand the wizard's a little bit magic, but doesn't take care of everything. The Copy Cluster Role Wizard comes with this nice report that tells you exactly what it's migrated and if there are any fix-up steps that are needed in the wizard, so after you run the wizard. So it'll detect if there's any network settings that need adjustment, anything like that. It'll warn you. So many people, many customers find that useful. All right, and here we go. So let's demo this. So this is where we find out if the demo gods will smile upon this or not. I should be okay. Let's see if I can do this one-handed. Okay. There we go. Finally. All right. Okay. Here I have a Windows Server 2008 R2 cluster. It has several VMs on here. It's a simple two-node cluster with shared storage. And let's go ahead and practice migrating workloads over here. This is my Windows Server 2012 R2 cluster. Which I've carefully configured. So running the cluster migration wizard is very straightforward. You click on the cluster name, the right mouse context menu gives you a menu option here, copy cluster roles. Click on that. Again, some text for you to read. Let us type in the name of the old cluster, so case insensitive. Let's see if I can get this right. This was very descriptive at the time, and now I'm kind of wishing I called it Bob. Okay, it found the cluster. It's looking at the roles on the cluster. It's going to tell me what I can migrate, what I can't migrate. The feature I want to show you here is that the migration wizard works on a LUN by LUN basis. So it's gone out and it's enumerated the CSV disks. And you'll notice that this is nicely resizable. Look at that. So if you have a lot of VMs, you can resize that. Now, since it migrates on a LUN by LUN basis, if I want to migrate this machine here, demo VM7, right, I can't just migrate it in isolation. I have to migrate everything that's on that CSV volume, right? So it's per CSV volume. So, okay, so suppose I want to migrate just VM3. Again, I have to bring VM2 and VM4 over with it. All right. Well, this is my boss's desktop machine. Let's migrate that. So, now, the nice thing is, the wizard also detects that I'm migrating a VM workload, and it's going to ask me, it's prompting me to specify what network I want to use for the virtual switch. So there's some intelligence in the wizard itself, which is nice. And then it's done. It's ready to go. Now, are you ready for the quiz? Has there been any downtime yet? The answer is no. That VM's still running on that old cluster. See, I can now click and view the report, and I can look at this thing, and it tells me exactly everything that it's done. There's no fix-ups needed. I can save this report, mail it to my boss if I want to. But there's been no downtime. Now, let's have a quick look at what this looks like on the new cluster. On the new cluster, you'll notice this VM is down, right? It's not running yet because I haven't cut over yet. So I can do this, I can migrate at any point in time. Also, the CSV disk that I've migrated, it's also down. All right, ready for some downtime? I've been practicing this. I hope you can tell. It's so short, you can't actually sing the Bohemian Rhapsody. But you can whistle Dixie. So first, I'm going to take, so here we go. Let's go for some downtime. I'm going to take the I'm just going to turn this virtual machine off. I'm going to go for it. So, very fast. I'm going to take the disk offline here on the old cluster. Now, at this point, some customers prefer to mask to get into storage and unmask the CSV disk so that the old cluster can no longer use it. I'm going to start and online the CSV disk here. See, and I would be about done with Whistling Dixie about here. If this fails, this will be the first time it's failed for me. I'll be so upset. All right. So the CSV disk comes online, click on the VM, and we can online it here. Start. Now, wait a second. I'm not down and out yet. It's okay. I saw it go green. Okay, what's going on? Okay. All right. Okay. So, in any case, the meta points there are that the copy cluster role wizard has minimal downtime. The two steps of migrating the roles and then cutting the roles over are separate and distinct steps. Okay, so now I'll do the Bohemian Rhapsody. it's actually a great little utility. It has a lot of capabilities in there. It can move a lot of the roles that you need for you. Now, since that demo's done, I think we have just a few minutes to summarize here. Ben, do you want to summarize?
No, I'm not going to answer questions.
Okay. In summary, it is possible to upgrade your private cloud with no/minimal downtime. Careful planning is required to get you the best possible upgrade experience. Okay. Do you have any questions?
I see a silhouette hand raised. Do we have microphones in the middle of the room, or? Yes, we do. If you want to yell out your question, too, we'll repeat it.
We have a lot invested in CSVs on the cloud in our cloud. I'm curious if you think that going to a Windows file server cluster to a backend storage, or PHD storage, instead of CSVs is the transition we should be considering as we upgrade the cloud.
So the question is to restate, we have a lot of investment in CSV storage today with 2008 R2. Curious to know if we believe you should be going to file server and 2012 R2. First, were you listening? I mentioned a number of times you should be going to file server. Let's just be really clear about this. The recommendation is that you use a scale-out file server, which is actually a file server built on top of CSV. So the way to think about this is it's not that you're moving off of CSV. It's really that, and this is the key concept here, we just want to separate compute and storage. Because one of the things that the Hyper-V team has always maintained is you want your Hyper-V servers to be lean and mean and dedicated to nothing but virtualization, and we really don't like things running in the parent partition. Unfortunately, my counterparts on the file server team have been doing a lot of great work, doing lots of cool stuff with file server and storage and so on. And so the reality is that these days, you look at CSV, you look at a scale-out file server, you've got 2012 R2, we've got live deduplication, they're doing caching, they're doing a whole bunch of stuff to get the most out of your storage. You don't want that in your parent partition.
And to be clear, some of the things we're talking about here have everything to do with being flexible,
yep.
right? When you have block storage connected directly to the Hyper-V cluster, you need to have that uniform configuration across a larger number of nodes, right? So if you're using Fibre Channel or if you're using iSCSI, you have to have that up on, let's say, 16 Hyper-V nodes. If you do that with a file server, you have reduced that requirement to actually just the file server nodes, which are fewer.
Yeah, we should actually call that out because we haven't called that out explicitly. Today, when we see people doing Hyper-V clusters with direct attached storage, yeah, you have, you know, an 8-node cluster and you have to have HBAs or whatever interfaces in each of those. When we talk about moving to a scale-out file server, we're not saying, you know, for every Hyper-V server you should have a file server cluster node. No, absolutely not. You know, what we're saying is, you know, what you're going to do is you're going to have, say, a 32-node Hyper-V cluster, and then you're going to have a 6-node file server cluster on the back end. That's an abstraction layer between Hyper-V and your storage.
And when you think about it, right, if you have this kind of configuration, what we're essentially doing is we're separating that storage layer and enabling new scenarios. For instance, think about the shared JBOD that you use with storage spaces that uses SAS connectivity. It's, if you have a 64-node Hyper-V cluster, I can by all means connect that to a 2-node, maybe a 4-node file server cluster, and SAS for 2 or 4 nodes is a breeze. Now try wiring SAS to 64 nodes on the Hyper-V side. It's a much harder proposition that involves a number of expanders. I would argue it wouldn't even work. You would have to segment that compute cluster to smaller pieces to be able to handle that. So the notion here is that done well, the file server cluster introduces a layer, that's true, but introduces a layer that has some goodness in it. And the example of dedupe is an excellent one. And just the notion that you have multiple clusters talking to multiple file server nodes and that tight integration between the storage and the compute now becomes more flexible. And that's the whole idea.
So right. So to get back to the original question, I guess the two meta points are, one, yes, please be looking at file server. Two, I don't really view this as going away from your investment in CSV. I view it as continuing to build on your investment in CSV. Does that answer? So, and absolutely, here we're talking about private cloud and we're expecting a scale scenario. You know, if you're looking at branch office or if you're a small business where, you know, you're only running 2 Hyper-V servers, yeah, you're going to use Direct Connect. You're not going to use a file server. That makes all the sense in the world.
If you only have 2 nodes, it makes no sense to put a file server in the middle.
Yeah.
You go with straight up CSV with whatever kind of storage you're using, maybe shared SAS and storage spaces, maybe some other solution with a RAID controller or something. But yeah, in that case, it makes no sense.
So
but
actually,
the scale piece is where we're trying to get you. And you have like 6 compute nodes, 8 compute nodes more, then it makes all the sense.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so pub quiz moment. The smallest deployment I've seen of Hyper-V where someone made the decision to go, yeah, I'm going to have a file server cluster, was actually a 7-node Hyper-V cluster with a 2-node file server cluster.
I would compare that to the notion of going from 1 gig to 10 gigabit Ethernet. You have 2 1 gigs, you can live on that, that's fine, your team. 4 1 gig, yeah, you can do that. By the time you get to 8 1 gig NICs and you're trying to team that, which by all means works fine, your overhead of doing all that starting to hit you. That's time to start thinking about 10 gigabit Ethernet.
So we're now 30 seconds over, which is why they just put the lights up. So that was our message to say get off the stage. Thankfully, they don't use the hook anymore. When are you guys going to be at the booth and the show floor?
So I have a session on shared virtual disks coming up later in the afternoon, and maybe tomorrow I'll be trying to get there.
I'll be at the booth all day tomorrow.
So I'll be at the storage booth all day tomorrow.
And I'll be at the virtualization booth all day tomorrow, and conveniently we are like two booths apart. So please come down tomorrow if you have any further questions.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Thank you.